Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel. Nice to have you with us today. What to do after a workout to make it count? Well, we all think when we finish working out, that's it. No, you can do a lot more. I'll give you the type of nutrients that can really build your body, especially muscle. You have a morphine-like painkiller, all natural, non-addictive, growing in your backyard. Bet you didn't know it. I'll tell you what it is and how it can help you with migraines, insomnia, anxiety, even asthma and cough. From Queen Mary University in the United Kingdom, vitamin D is proven to protect against respiratory infections. And microbiota, that's your good bacteria, can determine if pomegranate extract are beneficial and how. And also, does junk food, the standard American diet, slow down your metabolism? We'll get to that as well. Then a commentary from Robert Perry. When disinformation is truth, you'll understand that once I start to talk about that. And also, why the white middle class is dying faster. Yeah, it is. I'll explain that. And also from Dr. Kerry Coles, medical doctor, the newest studies show that aluminum is extremely neurotoxic, and it's in these vaccines. A lot of vaccines. So how is it then that they can tell us with absolute certainty that vaccines are safe and effective? They can tell us that. It's just they don't have the science on their side to support it. But we have the science on our side, extreme amount of science showing there is no such thing as a safe vaccine. In fact, it is not scientifically possible. I'll explain that. And then today, we're also going to talk about how you shouldn't eat bacon, but a USDA whistleblower tells us why we shouldn't be eating bacon. And also from commentaries, everyone's on this idea that the charter schools, the privatization of education, that's the number. That's what we have to do. Well, as a 35-year school teacher, I can tell you that's not what we have to do. Now, in and of itself, I'm not against charter schools. There are some that are well done. The students are not only well behaved, but are learning a lot of life's lessons, but the vast majority are not. So today, from Sarah Lazar, a special investigation from Common Dreams, fraud, waste, and lies, how most charter schools are cheating communities out of millions of dollars. From our audio files, and I might mention in the very near future, hopefully next week, you'll be able to watch, not just listen to the audio clips and see the actual, what is going on in the films. We're going to talk about how Monsanto's weed killer found in a lot of foods, how a natural fruit extract can kill cancer cells, how body organs of over 18,000 children in Syria were sold, and massive protests in Yemen, one of the largest protests in the world, but no one paid attention. Why? And also from our commentary today, we're going to have talkback on this issue. Why is it that the left is no longer the liberal class? In fact, General and later President Dwight D. Eisenhower was more liberal and more progressive than most of the people calling themselves liberal today. After that commentary, you'll have a chance to call in because I've decided not to have a guest today so you can have an opportunity to share your points of view. And we have a lot of really intelligent people in this audience who can share some important insights. And that talkback number, when we do go to give it, is 888-874-4888. Also, our numbers are just in today, and I was told by Jesse in our studio in New York that Progressive Radio Network is number one in the entire world. Of all the thousands and thousands and thousands of radio stations and all the people like Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Michael Savage, whether you like them or not, they have large audiences. More people listen to us live each day than any of them or anyone else, and also more people go to the archives and download our shows. Let me give you those two phone numbers. Please write them down. You never know when you're not going to be around a computer or a land-based station, and you might have to use them. To listen live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, and Tuesday afternoon or evening, 7 to 8, call this phone number, 619, that's 619-550-0869. Again, listening live over any portable listening device or regular telephone, 619-550-0869. And to download anytime, 24/7, up to 5 programs from our archives, it's a different phone number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, hopefully, and I'm sure most of you are doing daily workouts. In a good week, let's say you spend 7 hours working out. I think that would be, unless you're training for a special athletic event, that would be ideal. Now, for some of you, that might sound like, gee whiz, that's an awful lot of time, but it really isn't. And remember, you spend 7 hours a week exercising, you still have 161 hours a week that you're not. And we know that by doing a good balance between exercise and a healthy lifestyle, that we're going to add, realistically, you can add 10 to 15 years onto your productive lifestyle span. Remember, when they come up with an average lifespan of 76, it's down 2 years from what it was and dropping. It's not because people are living 76. What's happening is more people are living longer lives because they're doing everything right or a lot more right. Let's say they're living into their 90s, healthily, no disease. But more people are also dying younger in their 50s. And hence, that's the average. So if you're doing everything right, the new 70 is the new 45. 50 is the new 35, literally at the biochemical level. So what do you need to do to have a really good workout? Well, first and foremost, so you don't have a heart attack or a stroke, when you're exercising, make sure that you're getting adequate magnesium. Now, magnesium helps on many levels. It includes protein synthesis, muscle and nerve function, building muscle, controlling your blood sugar levels, and most importantly, it helps the mitochondria release adenosine triphosphate, which is your actual energy. So you have more energy. And we lose magnesium in our sweat. Most people do not eat the dark green leafy vegetables, almonds and cashews and sesame seeds, and avocados that are good sources of magnesium. One of the best is seaweed, but most people don't eat seaweed, so they're not getting enough. So if you want to reduce painful muscle cramps after workout, 400 to 600 milligrams of magnesium citrate. And then if you really tighten your muscles, you've done a real strenuous workout, biking, jogging, running, race walking, then put some magnesium mineral salts, Epsom salts, into a bathtub, generally 2 quarts, and get it on not hot, but very warm, and relax in there where your legs are stretched out, and gently move your legs and rub your muscles for about 20 minutes. And that's one way to help you get the lymphatic system flowing, which is your body's great detoxification system. And it also relaxes the muscles. And it's particularly important if people are having restless leg syndrome. It helps with that. And people have trouble at night relaxing their muscles. That will help, especially at night, take about 600 milligrams of magnesium. That relaxes the muscles at night. Also, within 20 minutes of a workout, make sure you have a protein shake and try to get one scoop or one serving of the branched chain amino acids and creatine monohydrate. Put it in there, 2,000-3,000 milligrams of creatine monohydrate. That will help you actually get those nice ripped muscles. So your workout really benefits you in a tremendous way. But also, there's more L-glutamine, G-L-U-T, and then amine, A-M-I-N-E, means amino acid. So the glutamine, which is a very important one, you want to get that muscle back that you've lost over your lifetime. And it's amino acid and a building block, one and the same. So you're going to build better muscles if you're taking L-glutamine. I'm suggesting 1,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day. So that's all good. Now, a lot of people today are hooked on morphine-type drugs. In fact, I just saw yesterday that President Trump has appointed Governor Christie to oversee a whole new commission on dealing with morphine-related use. Now, of course, you know that being Republican, you know exactly how they're going to go about it. They're going to want to increase sentencing for its use. I think they're born with a gene. I think they're anally born or immaculate conception with a gene that means that the moment there's a problem, they militarize the solution. I've never seen him actually sit down and have common sense and reason in science, ever. They're just the dumbest human beings on earth. And so, of course, being a complete health advocate and probably one of the most trim, fit people as an example to his constituents and his family, Governor Christie is certainly the ideal person to exemplify what someone in the healthcare field needs to be. So they're choosing just the right person. And, of course, since he's known as a former federal prosecutor and as a governor who takes no prisoners, then I can only imagine how many private prison contractors are just salivating. First of all, you shouldn't be throwing anyone in jail ever because they used any drug, period. If a person has a problem with a drug, you help them by understanding why did you use the drug. And they'll give you all forms of excuses and reasons. I happen to know this personally because for decades at the Institute of Applied Biology, which is also affiliated with Trafalgar Hospital, and I was one of the trustees of Trafalgar Hospital, Fanny Holzer, the great lawyer, was also a friend of mine. She was on the board. I happened to help with the natural approaches to drug addiction, and they were one of the city sponsors that if you either take methadone or go to jail. So people wanted methadone, but they weren't interested in any treatment. But I work with them, and mainly young people, and over time, I ask them, why are you taking the drug? What's going on in your life you feel you need it? Well, you get all kinds of excuses. That's the beginning point. So shouldn't we be asking all these people who are on morphine? Because morphine's a painkiller. It doesn't give you a buzz. It just gives you this state where you're no longer connected to any kind of pain in your life, much like heroin. And living on the Upper West Side and living close to and walking by Needlepoint Park at 72nd and Broadway almost every day, you'd see people in that park just sitting there with sometimes the syringe right in their arm and just nodding out, or people on the street just nodding out. Why would someone do that? Shouldn't that be where you begin your effort? Not at a way of trying to once again create one more law that we don't need. In fact, we got about 5 million laws we don't need. And any responsible and progressive society would eliminate most of those laws because most are draconian. So don't criminalize it, and don't put people in jail, and don't give them criminal records, and don't give them psychiatric records and diagnosis because they're using morphine. Most people, my experience has shown me, use morphine as a painkiller, yes, but then they use it because they find too many things in life they can't cope with. They've lost control of many of the essential parts of their life. And then instead of honoring a bad choice, and I believe we should honor all of our bad choices, not in a joyful way, but just to say, yes, I made that mistake. Okay, why? How? How did you justify it? And most importantly, if you were to teach a class in front of you about bad choices, what would you teach them about the choices you've made? And go into great detail about how the mind has endless doors that can open for excuses, rationalizations, justifications. Here's the door that says, I am a victim. Something happened some point in my life, and I will forever wear that merit badge. Every day I get up, just like a good Boy Scout, I put on that merit badge. I'm a victim. Therefore, I must see life and other people as ultimately victimizing me. Well, how are you going to overcome that? You can't overcome it if you keep seeing yourself as a victim. You have to shift the energy. And how do smart people do stupid things and good people do bad things? Well, because when they're doing a stupid thing, you're not smart. And when you're doing a bad thing, you're not good. But we can't handle political incorrectness. We have to say no. Otherwise, it's just a good person. No, if you're doing something bad, you're a bad person. If you do something stupid, you're a stupid person. It doesn't mean everything you do is bad, and it doesn't mean everything you do is stupid. But how are you going to grow into something less vulnerable to your limitations until you embrace your dark side, understand your weaknesses, stop beating up on yourself, and stop using anything from your past as an excuse not to have a positive and spiritually dominant position today? And that's how I taught. That's the lesson I taught each day. I did a class every day. I didn't ask them, you know, about, well, did your mother breastfeed you enough? That's why you became a heroin addict. No. Because everybody's got their lies, their patented excuses down pat. They're not going to change. You have to have a different mindset in order to change. So changing your perception then changes your reality. You cannot change your reality if you don't change your perception. So the one thing we never talk about in our society is our perception. We only talk about the end stage breakdown, the heart attack, the stroke, the bankruptcy, the divorce, the mean-spiritedness, the insensitivity, the vulgarity. Do you really think you're smart because you curse and spittle out of all sides of your mouth? You think that's liberating? It's not liberating. To the contrary, you've just constricted that which could have allowed you in a more enlightened and spiritual way to have expressed yourself without the feeling that you had to denigrate or limit the value of another human being. That's why when people get angry, they never say something good. They never say, oh, I'm so frustrated with life. God, I'm going to go eat a Sprout salad. No. No, they got to do something. They have to use their vocabulary, their linguistics of expression changes. Well, we have to get control of this. We can't get control of it if we don't identify it. So if you don't identify the tens of millions of people who are living in dire poverty, who are living on food stamps, who are working two jobs and still can't make it, who have student loans they can't pay back, where there's no job for them to even pay back. The only jobs couldn't even begin to pay for their living expenses, let alone the loans that the government and the private insurers have put. They can't pay their car payment. They're going to have their car repossessed. They can't pay their home payment. They're eating junk food. They're eating out of frustration. And so someone says, rather than eating out of frustration and angst, why not take OxyContin? Why not take hillbilly heroin? Okay. And now the person is in la-la land. And therefore, they don't have to think about all the promises made to them by Democrat and Republicans combined over the last 40 years and broken every single one. Or how life's not going to get better for them, even if they listen to 45,000 Tony Robbins, it doesn't matter. The only one who gets better from Tony Robbins is Tony. Okay, we all know that. And Deepak, we know that. It's all a game. The whole self-empowerment movement is a game. The spiritual movement's a game. The New Age movement's a game. We just go from one game to another game. It's all stupid. One televangelist to another televangelist to a messianic a complex person, pull back far enough, and my God, you start thinking, How in the world did I ever believe any of this nonsense? So where are you starting, Governor Christie? You're starting by trying to ask what's wrong with the people, by asking what's wrong with the world, what's wrong with society, what's wrong with the promises, what's wrong with the liberty, what's wrong with inequality, what's wrong with the criminalization of poverty? No. You're not going to ask any of those questions, nor can the Donald Trump. He doesn't have the intellect to ask any question. Nope. So watch what they do with morphine. But that aside, realistically, there are people who need painkillers, especially people who have legitimate pain, not psychological pain, and they need help. I do not recommend any current over-the-counter or prescription painkillers because they have terrible side effects. But there's one that can be growing in your backyard. It's called wild lettuce. And it is a natural painkiller. That's correct, because wild lettuce is good for migraines and anxiety. And easy to find, easy even to grow. And it is also known as opium lettuce or bitter lettuce. So just something that I'd share. You can look for it in North American and England. Easy to find. Now, vitamin D is very important, and we should be in the sun to get it. But we're not always able to get the sun year-round, depending upon where we live and our work schedules. So take a supplement each day. Why? Because according to Queen Mary University, when you're getting enough vitamin D, your immune system is healthier. And with a healthier immune system, you can help maintain proper levels of nutrients and immune modulators that can help prevent Alzheimer's and cancer. That's according to this study. This was a meta-analysis, meaning a lot of different studies were looked at. It can help fight the colds and flu. And that's good. I'm suggesting, and you look at, there were 25 double-blind randomized placebo-controlled trials and with 11,000 people. And it showed that you can reduce acute respiratory infections by taking vitamin D3. And it was as effective as getting a flu shot. Well, I don't recommend a flu shot ever because it's never been shown to prevent the flu. Let me explain this so you understand. Let's say I come on the air one day and I say that if 1,000 people in this audience told me that they took vitamin C, 500 milligrams a day, each day for the last year, and at the end of that, only 50 people came down with the flu or cold. Therefore, I'm going to say today that vitamin C at 500 milligrams a day was able to prevent a cold or flu in, you know, almost 1,000 people. A, that would be inaccurate. B, it would be unscientific. C, it would be nonsense. You would immediately dismiss that. Well, Gary, how do you know? How do you know it wasn't other things they were taking? Did you see whether or not they were out in the sun? Were they stressed or relaxed? Did they have elevated cortisol levels or normal cortisol? Were they exercising or not exercising? Were they right weight or overweight or underweight? Were they getting a good night's sleep? All these could impact the immune system and therefore determine the number and severity of a cold or flu. Too many variables. And now, but remember this, if you get a flu shot and you do not get the flu, 100% of the credit for not getting the flu went to the flu shot. None of it to anything else. Now that is the most foolish, unscientific, fraudulent way of measuring, and yet that's what they do. You may not be aware of it, but that's how they come up with these stupid statistics to justify people using a flu vaccine. The flu vaccine's garbage. It's dangerous and it's garbage. So just remember, when they give any vaccine a credit for people using it and not coming down with the disease, There is no science to back them up. None. So look at lifestyle. Much better. Also, the potential cardiovascular effects of pomegranate nutrients were tested, and this was published in Clinical Nutrition, and it showed that there were significant benefits to pomegranate. We've known that, and we've known that pomegranate has nutrients, phytonutrients, including what I've shared with you many times, the potent beneficial effects observed in what is called C. elegans, E-L-E-G-A-N-S. And so when you're taking pomegranate, the pomegranate concentrate, the pomegranate powder, or the pomegranates, you're benefiting the aging process. Finally, does junk food slow down your metabolism? According to the latest study, the answer is yes. And junk food is any highly processed food that gives you lots of empty calories, refined carbohydrates, unhealthy fats, and animal proteins. And plus the potato chips, the french fries, the pizzas, the soft drinks. It's all junk food. None of it's healthy. There's nothing in it that's healthy. It all undermines our health. But also, it's bad for digestion, bad for energy, bad for elimination. It is toxic. But it also can slow down your metabolism, and that means that you're more likely to end up with insulin resistance, diabetes, and weight gain. So stay away from the junk foods. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Noll. This is an interesting major story from the newspaper, Behaving Naughty in School. Little kids worse than big kids. Quote, this is from educational reporter Selim Algar. Elementary public schools committed more sexual mischief and violence than older students last academic year. That's according to Department of Education data. Elementary-aged kids, this is usually between 5 and 10, had more low-level sexual offenses, assaults with injuries using a weapon than middle school, junior high, and high school students combined, according to Department of Education. Staffers must report all misconduct to the Central Department of Education personnel. They looked at 503,770 public elementary students. Wow. There were 1,333 sexual offenses, 354 assaults, 3,849 assaults with injuries, and 523 assaults with injuries with the use of a weapon. That's very high, especially when you consider these are usually in elementary kids 5 to 10 years old? So here's a question. Why? When we were going to school, none of the above. We're talking about, here's what they looked at. Sexual offenses, forcible sexual offenses, assault with injury, and assault injury involving a weapon. And the youngest were involved in more than junior high and high school. Why do you think? If you have an answer to that, call in. Now we're going to play you a segment, one of our audio clips. This is The Left is No Longer Liberal. It's not long. And this is the one I want you to call in and share your points of view. Please listen.
You're not going to believe this, but we have to talk about the regressive left today. I've actually been trying to get away from discussing the regressive left lately and instead talk about the ideas of classical liberalism, which I believe in, but current events keep dragging me back. I see on social media that people are using the phrase regressive left a bit less lately and replacing it with terms like bigoteer, the control left, or the illiberal left. Whatever name you use for this well-meaning yet painfully misguided set of ideas is largely irrelevant. We needed this phrase to identify this backwards ideology which puts groups before people, and sometimes you need a label to get people to understand an idea. The portion of the left which is no longer progressive, meaning for progress, but regressive, meaning going backwards, has been identified, and now we're clearly bringing people to the side of reason. All of you who talk about this with friends and family, who use the regressive left hashtag on Twitter, and share these videos are part of this political awakening. Yes, it seems like these backwards ideas are getting stronger in some circles, but at the same time, finally, for the first time in a long time, those of us who are liberal and open to new ideas are coming together and being heard. Whether or not you like Trump, his win was a huge rejection of the identity politics of the left. But don't take my word for that. Bernie Sanders said it himself. The only thing which can replace the regressive dissent of the left is a return to true liberalism. A liberalism which defends free speech and expression, a liberalism that is for liberty and rights of the individual, and most importantly, a liberalism that is one for human liberty. I now believe that this regressive ideology is the biggest threat to freedom and Western civilization that exists today. With the rise of Trump and the constant comparisons they make of him to Hitler, the left now has the perfect boogeyman to use to excuse anything. If your opponent is a vile racist, then you can use violence and any means necessary to stop him. The regressive left has already begun using violence as a tactic, and I fear that that's just getting started. If you're only now getting up to speed on what the regressive left is, allow me to recap quickly. The regressive, control, illiberal left, whatever you want to call it, is a group of people who place identity, usually based on immutable characteristics, in a pecking order of social importance, such as race, gender, and religion, where victimhood is the highest virtue to be had. This oppression Olympics allows groups to compete for who is the most oppressed, thus the most virtuous. And if someone isn't as oppressed as you, then you have full authority to oppress them accordingly. So Black Lives Matter can protest a gay rights march in Toronto. White gay men can be banned from leading LGBT organizations on college campuses. Pro-life women can be kicked out of women's rights marches, and so on. This backwards ideology, which demands we judge each other not on the content of our character, but on the color of our skin or some other baked-in trait, puts the collective ahead of the individual. It loves all of its minority groups to behave as monoliths. So if you're a true individual, meaning you don't subscribe to the ideas that the groupthink has attributed to you based on those immutable characteristics, you must be cast out. Many of the guests on my show have suffered from this backwards backlash. Ayaan Hirsi Ali, Majid Nawaz, Sarah Hader, and Ali Rizvi all have felt abandoned by the left because they speak out about the problems within Islam. They dare to fight for a more tolerant, more truly progressive Islam in tune with a modern society and basic liberal values, and for that they're labeled bigots or worse. The Southern Poverty Law Center even labeled Majid as an anti-Muslim extremist. In reality, Majid's a former Islamist who has devoted his life to trying to reform Islam from the inside, to try to reconcile his faith with the modern world, fighting for gays and atheists and women and any other free thinkers living under theocratic rule. For this, he is called a porch monkey and other vile names by supposed progressives, while at the same time he's admired by many on the right for being outspoken. This is the absolute height of absurdity, but it all makes sense when you value groups over individuals. The individual must be sacrificed at the altar of the collective. So when any of these people dare speak out and call for true tolerance, they find their tolerance met with intolerance. The left loves diversity in skin color, just not diversity in thought. Of course, this regressive ideology isn't just tied to Islam at all. My guest this week is Larry Elder, a Black conservative who has had every label and smear thrown at him. Again, like with the previous guests I just mentioned, these slurs come from people on the left who would rather silence and dismiss their opponents than actually engage them in an honest way. People often ask me which interview I've done that's changed my views the most, and I almost always say that it was the first time I sat down with Larry Elder. He challenged my views on systemic racism, as well as the need for a strong family, and was one of the people that helped sell me on why small government is important. If you haven't seen the video, we'll post the link right down below. Larry challenged me, and I wasn't ready, so I can't say that it was my best moment on camera, but I listened and learned, and just as importantly, we didn't edit any of it out. So I'm looking forward to picking up where Larry and I left off. And as for where we left off, this is where I feel there might be nothing left for me on the modern American left. You all know most of my positions on important issues. I'm for free speech, even for white supremacist Richard Spencer to speak and not get punched in the face, as happened just a couple days ago. And I'm still a card-carrying liberal, by the way. I'm for gay marriage, I'm pro-choice, I'm pro-legalization of marijuana, I'm against the death penalty, and the list goes on. At the same time, though, I'm against this oppression Olympics. I'm against safe spaces and trigger warnings. I'm against labeling all my opponents bigots and racists, and I'm against deplatforming speakers, especially at colleges where ideas are meant to be challenged and debated. I'm also for states' rights, for following the Constitution, and most importantly, for having a limited government that gets out of the way so that you can live your life to the fullest. I've said a few times on the show that defending my liberal principles has become a conservative position. Interestingly, I've also heard conservatives like Andrew Klavan and Dennis Prager say that they are conservatives because they really are liberals. This is where we might get lost in the definition of liberal in the modern sense versus classical liberal. So if you're still confused about that, check out a video I did a couple weeks ago called Why I'm a Liberal. We'll put a link to it right down below.
I'd like to hear your points of view. We have all types of people listening. I do not advocate any political, religious, or sexual orientation for anyone. Whatever your views are, that's your right. I'm just interested in how you perceive the world and the events. I would suggest this, and I've made this comment several times. If we want a better world, how reasonable is it that the politicians are going to provide it for us? Which politician? Yes, there are unique individual politicians. Ralph Nader would have been one. Think of the world had Nader been elected president. It'd be a completely different world today. We would not have had the inequality. We wouldn't have had the war in the Middle East because we wouldn't have troops in the Middle East. So we wouldn't have had all these problems going on. But we didn't. I voted for Ralph. Many of the progressives voted for Ralph. But the corporate liberal establishment found him a threat. Well, who really promoted the idea he was a threat? Was it the people who wanted universal health care? He would have provided it. Who would have wanted to de-ghettoize America? He would have provided it. Who would want a stronger air and water pollution and better food control and not have GMOs? He would have done that. Who would have not had a stop and search? His attorney general wouldn't have allowed that. Think of the things that the world would not have today. We wouldn't have a militarized police. We wouldn't have eliminated habeas corpus. We wouldn't have a National Defense Authorization Act. We wouldn't have a Patriot Act. We wouldn't have had 9/11 because we wouldn't have been in Saudi Arabia, which was one of the motivating factors for Osama bin Laden and others to attack us. Yeah, we wouldn't have 20 million people who are dead in the world because we decided to intervene in their politics and regime change. We wouldn't have had a coup in Honduras. We wouldn't have been anti-union. We wouldn't be supporting dictators. We wouldn't have destroyed Gaddafi, or there wouldn't have been us engaging in Syria. We wouldn't have $1 trillion towards nuclear arms race reignited. But think how smart the people were who said Ralph Nader, he's a spoiler, we don't want him. No, the one thing we did need, we didn't get. So look what we have today. Look at Donald Trump, if you can tolerate that. Look at Hillary Clinton, even worse. And look at Jill Stein that seemingly nobody wanted, only 1 million people, under 0.5%. That tells you a lot about our perceptions, our realities. So think about, what is the outcome of the choices we make? That's what he's really saying. I'd like to hear your points of view. Again, they're your points of view. 888-874-4888. 888-874-8888. We're going to take a brief break and come back. But before we do, just want to mention, we are almost full. I was told to make a very short mention of this because our bandwidth is about full for my Sunday night discussion webinar starting at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, probably going 2 to 3 hours. You're going to watch an award-winning documentary. You're going to get a documentary free. You're going to get a list of the places to live. I'm going to have an in-depth discussion of why you should not be trusting the media. You should not be trusting the average scientist, environmentalist. You should not be trusting the government when it comes to telling you how bad it is out there and going to be. There are about 15 scientists, climatologists I do trust, and they have very dire predictions. It doesn't mean an apocalypse. It doesn't mean we're all going to die. It does mean a lot of people will die, and hundreds of millions, billions will really suffer, and that's within the next 9 years, not in 9 years, every year leading up to that nine. Then we hit some big tipping points where the temperature will rise so fast overnight that you'll have places that won't grow anything. What do you do? What do you eat? Where do you live? You won't want to miss this. And also, we're in time and in line to have another solar storm. And will you be protected if there is one? What will you do if you woke up one morning and there's no electricity, no cell phones, no computers, no television, no refrigeration, no water? What would you do? Well, I'm going to show you what to do and how to survive it. I'm going to give you a number to call, 646. I believe this is the correct number. If it's not, I'm going to ask my engineer, make sure I'm giving out the right number for the webinar. But give a call, and after the spot, I'll give you the number, and that way you can call. And we only have a room for about 12 more people because we are packed. People all over the world have signed up for this. Remember, this is the number one radio program in the world for progressive minds. So we got a lot of people listening all over the place. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Okay, I have a number for you. Call 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. And we'll get you someone to speak with. I'll give you a second number in case that's full. 646-926-5435. 646-926-5435. Let's go over and say hello to John from Brooklyn. Hi, John, your turn. You're on the air, John.
Hello. I'm sorry. I have to mute my phone. Okay,
John.
Hello, Gary. I don't like this, the whole thing with the labels, basically. Because when you put a label on something, you don't have to think, basically. If you're a liberal or conservative, you identify with all this identification with politics or a political position. You don't have to think. You don't have to think what the issue is. You just see what they're talking about, and you don't have to think what for yourself. What, for instance, like vaccination, is that liberal or conservative, or any other issue in general? So I think the whole thing with the labels doesn't make any sense. I think do away with the labels and just think about the issues themselves.
Let's break down what you've said, John, and I think you've made some important points and relevant to our discussion. When I tell people that it doesn't matter what their religion or what their body politic is, It's just looking for the truth. If that's their truth, that's their truth. The question is, are we open up enough to allow our certainties to be challenged? What is the central meaning of your label? If you call yourself a conservative, like Sean Hannity prides himself that he's not a Republican, he's a conservative. Bill O'Reilly says he's an independent. Boy, that gives a strange definition for independent. But we only exist in our society based upon the labels that we have been given. That's unfortunate. I agree with you. I think you've made an extremely valid point. When people say, well, are you Democrat or liberal? What are you? I say, I'm just a human being looking for the truth, period. I don't care where the truth is. If I find that a truth is universally applicable, and that's the key, is your truth universal? For example, if you said we should all eat meat because it builds strong muscles, I would say, well, what about all the Hindus that are vegetarian? What about the ethical vegans? What about people who are scientists and medical doctors who have shown that a plant-based diet, excluding all animal proteins, actually allows you to live a longer and healthier life? And there is no science supporting that animal proteins prevent disease. To the contrary, there's over 1,000 studies showing that animal proteins contribute to disease. So then you put it onto the table. You're not saying to the person you must convert to veganism or plant-based diet. You're not saying you are foolish. You're simply saying, are you willing to examine honestly and accurately the central meaning of your belief? Now, for those who are true believers and are ultra-Orthodox in their views, meaning no other truth, no other insight, no other input will change anything they value, then you're having a conversation with the wrong person. The idea is that most information that has an important meaning is conveyed one to another, generally in non-hostile environments. A friend to a friend, a family member to a family member, someone at work, and they start a conversation. But it has to be universally true. I can show you a universal truth that the planet would have a longer capacity for sustaining its resources. We would have less of die-off of the human as well as species. We're losing 200 species every 24 hours. We would save at least a billion lives over the next 20 years on the planet that otherwise will die unless we radically change how we use the resources. So there's universal truths. If you said, I'm only going to like you if you come from my religion or that part of my religion that I belong to, I only will accept you if you're my economic class. When you're invited to Davos in Switzerland with about 1,400 of the world's wealthiest people, they don't invite you because you're smart. They don't invite you because you've done something unique that contributes to the public good or the universal consciousness of humans. They invite you because you're wealthy. They have summed their labeling of someone into, if you're wealthy, you must be smart and doing something right or you wouldn't be wealthy. By that notion, then anyone in the United States who's made billions of dollars, which there are many, selling arms that cause people to kill each other is then a valuable person. Someone selling drugs is a valuable person. If you made $1 billion and there are several people that have made $1 billion from drugs, then you should be a policymaker, because it's only those people who've told themselves, I'm smart enough because I'm wealthy enough and I'm powerful enough in order to change the world as we see it. So they get together and decide how they want the world to be. Therefore, their collective identification of wealth and social status determines that they are better keepers of the faith of humanity than anyone else. Now, who wouldn't you see at Davos? You wouldn't see Gandhi, Martin Luther King. You wouldn't see Mother Teresa. You wouldn't see Albert Schweitzer. You'd see none of the true humanitarians of the world there, because they're not, they may be well known and loved, but they're not rich and powerful. So labeling someone makes all the difference. That zip code in Beverly Hills that is famous? Well, kids got into school based upon having that zip code, which meant 90210. If you had a 90210, 210, the people in the school would allow you in irrespective of the quality of your academic potential over someone who might have been smarter or more motivated or a better student and a better contributor to society because they lived in a poor neighborhood. Hence the label. If you go to Harvard, it's automatically assumed that you're smarter. But in point of fact, the reality is that there are accrediting agencies, all of which are equal. None are superior or inferior. The same standards for academic excellence applies to every single accredited school in the United States. So therefore, the Tennessee School of Agriculture could have a teacher that was utterly unique and wonderful. The best teacher I ever had in my entire academic tenure was Mountain State College, James Dixon. Brilliant man. He forced us to think critically and outside the box on social issues. Now, is it automatically assumed that only the best and brightest instructors go to Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Columbia or Brown or University of Pennsylvania or Chicago? Stanford? That's the assumption. That's the label. But what if you took off all the names of all the universities and you simply put private educational institution or public educational institution? If the standard of accreditation is identical, then you cannot say that you are automatically going to get a better education by being at one versus the other. It is purely artificially constructed perception. Now look at the perception of the current cabinet and president. In my personal opinion, none of them are qualified to have any position at all in government. Now, they certainly did well for themselves in the private sector, every one of them. But that's because they were interested in how much money they could make for themselves and their corporations and their partners, and they did magnificently well at that. But not one of them is known for contributing to the public good and not themselves. So wouldn't it make sense then to select people who in a given area of expertise, education or energy, are looking at the common good and the environmental good and what is sustainable? That would be the way that you select someone for a particular position. But in the politics of both the left and the right, liberal and conservative, as we know it, they're all co-joined at the functional juncture with corporatism. And corporatism is an extension. It is the etheric energy of capitalism. And instead of examining capitalism and its history and asking, does it work and for whom does it work and who does it not work and what are the consequences of using it, we simply don't challenge that at all. We just keep feeding it. So everything is meant, the private, public offerings of the government means that the corporations will be doing everything we once did for ourselves, but charging us for it. And so you'll have a company that will get billions of dollars to build a highway or a bridge or a tunnel or a dam that has never built anything in their entire career. And they'll make billions of dollars off of it. They'll hire people who have experience in the field. And that's how our system works. We'll hire people for jobs who have never had experience in mediating peace. So all they know is war. And they'll be counseled by people like the Kagans out of Washington to commit war. That's a label, neocon. We look at every problem, the solution being conflict. And we have industries behind us that support us. So are you going to find universal truth in looking for peace when you're not using diplomacy? No. You can only find conflict at the end of that. Are we going to find a medical industrial complex that's going to reverse disease if they never had any understanding of vibrational medicine, functional medicine, and natural medicine? The answer is no, it's not possible. Will they actually be able to help people even using their methodology? The answer again is no, they're rewarded for failing. But no one questions it because they've been labeled medical expert, medical science, neither of which is accurate. So when it comes to labeling, virtually everything in our society is labeled. and dare the person to say, judge me for what I do, for that is who I am. Judge me for the energy I share, for that is what I am capable of, instead of judge me because of my pedigree, my background, my associations, my successes, my possessions. That's what we do now. So on that level, I fully agree with you, and thank you for calling in, John from Brooklyn. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day, everyone.